Hi, this is Jim O'Neill, and we're about to kick off episode 2 of Practical Azure. We're going to take a look at Windows Azure Blobs. So as with each episode of this series, we're going to start off with the overall Windows Azure roadmap and show what we're going to be talking about in this specific session. So we're going to talk about blobs. It's highlighted in red below. And to get started with blobs, the first thing you're going to need to do is get into your Windows Azure account. If you don't have one quite yet, we'll talk a little bit about how you can get one a little bit later in the webcast. But for now, let me just shift over into my Windows Azure portal, which is where I can provision a lot of the different services. One of those services is, of course, Windows Azure Storage. So let's walk through building up a Windows Azure Storage account. And to do so, I hit the Add button at the bottom left, hit Storage, and a quick Create. What a storage account is essentially a URL endpoint. That URL endpoint has to be unique across the world. So I typically will do something like use the date as the name of my endpoint. So Jim 1102-2012, and then it will have a .blob.core.windows.net suffix on it when I actually use it. I have to specify where in the Windows Azure ecosystem I want this storage to reside. I'm able to do so in two different ways. I can pick a specific region. Remember, there's 8 data centers. And I can actually name a region, give it a meaningful name that I can use across a lot of my different assets. So I have something called Jim Affinity Group, which happens to be East US. But let me just be more explicit and call it East US here. And then I have a subscription. This is essentially what subscription of Azure the storage unit is tied to. So this is how the billing works and that sort of thing. You'll notice the little checkbox that says Enable Geo-Replication at the bottom. This is actually kind of cool because what happens is every time you create a storage account, and a storage account can have 100 terabytes of data in it, every time you create one of those, you get 3 copies of every byte you write. Every byte you write is written 3 different times inside of that East US data center in this case. If I enable Geo-Replication, every byte is also then sent off to a sister data center. So the East Coast's sister data center is the West Coast, and 3 copies are replicated there as well. So this is great for disaster recovery scenarios as well. I can leave this on or I can shut it off. If I shut it off, my storage costs are about 33% less. So they go down to about 9 cents or so per gigabyte. The prices tend to change, so double check the pricing page to get the latest on that. So I'll create the storage account, and that's really all there is to it. It takes a few minutes to create the storage account, and once it's back up, we'll come back and take a further look at it. So now that the storage account has been created, let's take a look and see what we can do with it. When you click on a specific storage account, you'll get pulled into the dashboard. Now, the dashboard right now isn't showing any monitoring. We can turn that on in a moment. But what you'll see at the bottom are the 3 URLs that you will use to access the various types of storage. We're only going to be talking about blobs today, so that's the first URL here. As you can see, it's an HTTP URL, so any request that you make for blob storage, any request that you make to bring down a file or a video or whatever you happen to be storing there will be done over HTTP. Now, if I look at the monitor section, I'm able to turn on various different bells and whistles and switches and so on to determine how many requests I'm making, how many have failed, and that sort of thing. For this to be enabled, however, I have to do some configuration. And on the configuration tab, I again am able to check off whether I want to do the geo-replication for disaster recovery. But I can also check both monitoring and logging, and this is where I can get a lot of insight into how my blob storage is being used. I can set up minimal or verbose logging. So minimal logging will basically tell me how often the blob storage is being used, sort of hourly statistics. Verbose will bring it down essentially to each API. So anytime I get a particular item out of blob storage or put an item in blob storage, I'll know about it. Obviously, if the more verbose you get, the more storage that you're going to be using to store the logs and so on. I'm going to leave that alone for now, so we don't really need any monitoring at this point. And I'm going to go over to the containers. So the containers is where you actually start configuring your blob storage. So think of blob storage as essentially a big file system in the sky. Inside that file system, you're able to build essentially directories. We call those directories containers. So I can build a container, let's call it public, and we're going to make that access level to be public blob, which basically means that anybody that has that URL is able to access that blob storage and get access to documents that might be in it. And then I'm going to add another blob container in just a second here. So we'll add another blob container. Let's see, new container. the bottom here, and we'll call that one private. And we're going to lock this one down a little bit more closely here, and we'll make that one private, and we'll see what the differences are between those two. Now, at this point, I essentially have two directories in the cloud, one called private, one called public, underneath my storage account. I can't actually create directories inside of directories, so the containers are one level only. Inside each container is some sort of a blob or a document. It could be a Word document, could be a an MP3 file, could be a video or what have you. The name of that video could be anything you want. It could even include slashes in it, so you can make it look like a nested directory structure, but in actuality, it really isn't. What I can't do at this point is actually put anything in here. So in order to get something up into the cloud, I'm going to need to use some sort of other utility. There are a couple of free utilities out there. One of the ones that I like to use for specifically for blob storage is something called CloudBerry. And CloudBerry Explorer is essentially like a drag and drop between your file system and the cloud. And what I can do is set up an account in CloudBerry that maps to my Windows Azure storage account and then start dragging files back and forth from my local system. Now, in order to do that, I should have showed you one more thing. Each storage account here has essentially access keys. So think of it as sort of a password. So in order to put data up into the cloud, you need to know what the access key is of that storage account. So the access key shows up here in the portal, and I'm just going to copy it. You'll notice that there's two. And both of them will always work, but if for some reason you need to cycle your keys, you think there might have been some sort of breach or something, you can get rid of one key, the other key will still work, and then you can regenerate either the primary or the secondary. So I'm just going to use the primary at this point. We're going to copy it so I have it in my buffer, and we'll go back and create a new storage account in CloudBerry. Let me paste that right there real quick. And my storage account was Jim11022012. I typed correctly, and we'll just call this Jim's storage. So once this refreshes, you'll see that those are the two containers that we had created. So I'm going to just drag and drop a few files from my local file system. And these are just some logos. So let's drop Red Sox over to public. And we'll drop, let's see, White Sox over to private. And now you can see that I have redsox.png there. And what I can actually do here in CloudBerry is I can get the URL for that full reference to that blob. And just to show you that it's just HTTP, I can bring up a browser, type in that URL, so the blob.core.windows.net, followed by the container, followed by the actual blob, and there's the logo. So it's just pure HTTP going across the wire. Now, I can't really do that with the other one, so we can try it, but let me just jump up here. And we'll go to private, and we'll try the same thing, web URL. Now when we go here, you'll notice it says the web page can't be found. And the reason it can't be found is not that it's not there, but that it's locked down because that particular container is set to be private. The only way to access things inside of it is if you have that access key. So how do you manage that sort of in a programmatic environment? So what I'd like to do is bring up Visual Studio here. And I have a simple application. It's just a WPF application that goes out and grabs a blob out of my blob storage account, brings it down, and shows the picture that's in that storage account. So if I run this, for instance, this was called Red Sox, redsox.png. I can do a refresh, and there's my logo. So let's take a look behind the scenes and see how this was actually coded. So if I open up the code here, zoom in a little bit here. This is really, really simplistic because all I'm doing is I'm taking the source of the picture control and I'm just setting it to that URL. So it's the same URL that I cut and pasted inside of the browser. So it worked very well because it's a public URL. There was nothing else that I needed to provide in terms of access control. That's not going to work for the private version. So for the private version, there's a little bit more code that you need to add here. And let me uncomment this right quick, and then we'll kind of walk through how it all works. So if I can get it all on one screen here. So if we take a look at this, what we're doing here is we are creating a new piece of content called a Cloud Blob Client. Now, Cloud Blob Client and some of the other classes that you're going to see here, Cloud Block Blob and so on, are part of what's called the Windows Azure Storage Client. The Windows Azure Storage Client is some libraries that you can download from NuGet. In fact, if you want to go ahead and download them when you're inside of Visual Studio, you can do so through the Package Manager. So let me just show you that right quick. I've already done this, so I don't really need to do it again. But if you look here, you'll notice that I've called the method install-package windows-azure.storage. And what that will do is it'll bring down the necessary references and add them into your project so that you can use these specific classes. So if you look at the references here, I have Windows Azure Storage as one of the assemblies, and that assembly does indeed include Cloud Blob Client and Cloud Block Blob a little bit later. So within the Cloud Blob Client reference, I need to essentially set the name of the Cloud Blob account, and so that's essentially the Jim O'Neill 1102-2012, so the first part of that URL. Then I also have to provide the storage credentials. So the storage credentials consist of the name of the account again, and then that long string that we pulled out of the Windows Azure portal. Now typically you wouldn't leave this string inside of your application, inside your client application, because it's sensitive information. For demos, it's pretty much fine, and I'll talk a little bit later about how you might circumvent having to do something along these lines. And at this point, we have the Cloud Blob client account set up, so essentially a connection string to the server. Now we're going to make an asynchronous request and get the actual blob down from the server. We'll make that request. When that request has been fulfilled, a callback function will be invoked, and we'll be able to actually get the contents of that block blob assigned to our variable B. Now at that point, we have to do a little bit of massaging, because what we have is a block blob with some raw content, and we need to take that raw content and assign it into the picture control. So the code you see next, this dispatcher invoke to get the UI thread to do this work for us, is not really specific to Windows Azure. It's specific to just essentially taking some raw byte stream from a PNG file and assigning it into a picture control. So take a look at it, but don't stress over it. It's not really Windows Azure code. It's just image processing code. So with this change made, we should be able to access actually both of our blobs. So let's try the public one, which we were able to get to before, because again, it is just a public blob. But let's try doing that one. And we can. And now the private one that we weren't able to get to before, we should now be able to get to, because we are doing it through a connection that knows about the specific connection string and the specific credentials that are required to access this particular account. So there you have it. Now we've accessed Windows Azure Storage blob accounts from just a plain browser in a public container and also in a private container through a little bit of code. So with that, let me go back to the slides and we'll try to wrap it up here. And I wanted to give you a couple of handy links to learn a little bit more about blob storage and Windows Azure in general. So again, if you don't have your account, this is the link to get it, aka.ms/get-azure-trial, 90-day free account, no charges, no risk. The Azure Training Kit is an excellent tool. It's got a ton of demos, a ton of slideware and walkthroughs, tutorials, those types of things as well. So definitely download that. It is a little bit bulky, but you can pick and choose from what you want. Now, in terms of the blob content in general, there's a number of different links I've provided here in terms of learning a little bit more about blobs, the differences between different types of blobs, a how-to, a walkthrough, and those types of things as well. One of the things that you might want to look at specifically is this topic called managing access. So when I showed you the demo, I mentioned we were putting the private sort of key inside my actual code, which would be distributed to all your clients. You wouldn't do that normally. What you would typically do is create a service, maybe a WCF service that you're hosting in the cloud that kind of brokers the storage transactions, so that WCF service would know that private key, but your clients wouldn't. The other option is something called a shared access key. And we're not going to go into that right now, but what a shared access key is, it's essentially just a little bit more stuff that goes onto the URL for your blob request. And that stuff gets interpreted at the server as meaning that you have access to this particular blob for a certain amount of time, and you can do certain things to it. You can read it, but you can't write it, those types of things. So it's another way to manage access to a specific targeted audience. So a couple of different ways to handle that. I don't want to leave you with the understanding that you have to have this key inside your code. And then lastly, I did use CloudBerry Explorer to do some of the manipulation and movement of cloud blobs from my local storage account up to Windows Azure. That's a utility that you can access for free. There's a free version and a paid version, so feel free to look at that. We'll probably see a couple of different other utilities as time goes on in this particular series as well, so I'll bring those up when appropriate. So with that, thank you for watching. So thanks for joining me for this episode of Practical Azure, and tune in next time when we'll talk about Windows Azure Cloud Drives.